enjoy some time considering God's word this morning. I wanted to start today by showing you a picture. So, Irve, perhaps we could have that. And it's a bit like University Challenge, I suppose, and I'm Paxman. You have to tell me what this is. Sorry, you haven't got any buzzers. But can anyone tell me what they think this is a picture of? If you don't know, you can guess. Oh, very good. You're a learned man. What's your vocation? Ah, excellent. Yes. Yeah, for those of a scientific frame of mind, this is a picture of a life cycle, and the creature in question is a liver fluke. And this is a humble creature which, as a growing up, likes to live inside a sheep. And the mums and the dads, they lay eggs, which then hatch into little swimming creatures, which eventually take up residence inside snails. And there they take on a very different life, and they go through three very distinct different phases of life until eventually it decides to leave the snail, and it goes and lives in the grass until it's eaten by a sheep again. That's the liver fluke. And the reason I decided we were going to look at that just to get us thinking this morning is because it shows us that even the most humble of the creatures on this earth goes through the cycle of development and growth and change and going from one stage to another. And we see that even with a lowly worm, it goes through these very different and radical changes in life. And I think that's quite enough of the worm. Thanks, Irve. But if that's true of a worm, it's even more true, isn't it, of us as people. That we start off as children, later on we take on a role as students, and we develop into workers, leaders, teachers, parents. Perhaps we go through other stages in life as invalids or beggars, servants, whatever it is that life holds for us. We find that we develop and change and go through life and find ourselves playing different parts in life and taking on different roles. That's just part of life, and that's part of what we, in a sense, celebrate this morning, as Stuart put it this morning, the decommissioning of John, Mark and Azan from their life here at Alma and being commissioned to something new and starting a new work with Mustard Tree Church. They're leaving one stage of life behind, one community in which they've lived, and they're starting a new ministry, integrating into a new church family and starting something new. Paul, when he's writing to the Corinthian church, says something interesting. He says, God makes things grow. And when we think about the cycle of life and the way that life changes, that is something that God does. God makes things grow. But when Paul is writing that, he's not just writing it about liver flukes or cabbages or even people in their physical growth or in their career development or anything. He's talking about the growth of the church and people's spiritual development. And he says, God makes things grow. And for you as a spiritual creature and as a spiritual person, God is at work in your life through all the stages of your life to cause you to grow. And it's interesting that John Mark has chosen this morning to talk so much about the things he's learnt while he's been at Alma. I thought it might be appropriate on an occasion like this to take a look at the life of a saint of the past and see how it is that God has been at work in their life through all the different periods and stages. What sorts of things happen when God is at work in our life to make us grow? What sorts of things will we see? What should we expect to happen to us as we head through life and face all the different stages of that life? And so I'd like us to turn to Exodus chapter 2, please. Which in the Pew Bibles, I think, is page 58. Exodus chapter 2 is where I'll be taking the reading. I'm going to take a reading from the life of Moses, and I'd like us to look at the life of Moses this morning. And it's quite a long reading that I'll be taking, and so if you find that a bit dull and you'd like something to occupy your mind with, just try to think how many different stages can you identify in the life of Moses as we head through the reading. Okay? How many different stages can you see in the life of Moses? And we'll talk about those in a little while. So I'm going to start in verse 11, and I see we have it there. It's an adventure, isn't it, PowerPoint? And I'm living it this morning. So let's start in verse 11. It says, "One day, after Moses had grown up, he went out to where his own people were and watched them at their hard labor. He saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, one of his own people. Glancing this way and that, and seeing no one, he killed the Egyptian and hid him in the sand. The next day he went out and saw two Hebrews fighting. And he asked the one in the wrong, 'Why are you hitting your fellow Hebrew?' And the man said, 'Who made you ruler and judge over us? Are you thinking of killing me as you killed the Egyptian?' Then Moses was afraid and thought, 'What I did must have become known.' When Pharaoh heard of this, he tried to kill Moses, but Moses fled from Pharaoh and went to live in Midian, where he sat down by a well. Now a priest of Midian had seven daughters, and they came to draw water and fill the troughs to water their father's flock. Some shepherds came along and drove them away, but Moses got up and came to their rescue and watered their flock. When the girls returned to Reuel, their father, he asked them, 'Why have you returned so early today?' And they answered, 'An Egyptian rescued us from the shepherds. He even drew water for us and watered the flock.' 'And where is he?' he asked his daughters. 'Why did you leave him? Invite him to have something to eat.' Moses agreed to stay with the man, who gave his daughter Zipporah to Moses in marriage. Zipporah gave birth to a son, and Moses named him Gershom, saying, 'I have become an alien in a foreign land.' During that long period, the king of Egypt died. And the Israelites groaned in their slavery and cried out, and their cry for help because of their slavery went up to God. God heard their groaning, and he remembered his covenant with Abraham, with Isaac, and with Jacob. So God looked on the Israelites and was concerned about them. Now Moses was tending the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian, and he led the flock to the far side of the desert and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. There the angel of the Lord appeared to him in flames of fire from within a bush. Moses saw that though the bush was on fire, it did not burn up. So Moses thought, 'I'll go over and see this strange sight, why the bush does not burn up.' When the Lord saw that he'd gone over to look, Moses called to him from within the bush, 'Moses, Moses.' And Moses said, 'Here I am.'" I'm going to abridge this reading slightly, but God continues to speak to Moses. And we'll take it up in verse 10, where God gets to the crux of the issue and he says, "Now go, Moses. I'm sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt." But Moses said to God, "Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt?" Well, that's our reading this morning. I don't know how many different stages you would identify in the life of Moses, perhaps based on that reading or your more general knowledge about his life. But I want to look at what I would identify as three great periods in the life of Moses as he grew and developed under God's hand. Three different stages. And I want us to see something of how God is at work in Moses' life to change him, to challenge him, to develop him, to grow him. See what that looks like in the life of a real person. The first stage that we see in the life of Moses here is Moses the high flyer. We read in verse 11, it says, after Moses had grown up, he went out to where his own people were. Where did he go out from? We can only imagine that. He went out from the royal palaces. Because Moses was part of royalty. He had been adopted into the royal family of Egypt. And he walked the corridors of power with the most powerful and influential people of the greatest superpower of that age. Amazing existence that he had. He was a jet setter. He lived the life of the rich and famous. And I've put up a picture here, which is apparently an ancient likeness of Queen Hatshepsut, which is not the most easiest name to get your mouth around, but quite a good candidate for the woman who actually lifted Moses out of the rushes in the Nile. And it gives you some idea of a sense of the surroundings in which Moses found himself during this period of his life as a young man. And the Bible in other places tells us that he was in these surroundings until the age of 40. This is where he grew up. And so we can imagine Moses, can't we, as a young man. The New Testament says he is educated in all the wisdom of the Egyptians, and he was powerful in word and deed. So just imagine a vigorous young Moses, perhaps bent over his study books in the morning as a student, learning about hieroglyphics and cuneiform and Phoenician script, other Semitic forms of writing, legal codes. Perhaps in the afternoon he goes out for some martial arts instruction, a hand-to-hand combat and military strategy with the generals of Egypt. And as he gets older, we can imagine him officiating at an official opening of a new commemorative pyramid, or perhaps marrying a beautiful Nubian princess in a strategic allegiance with the people of Upper Egypt. We can only speculate, but this is the sort of life that Moses had in this first period of his life. Now, I guess when you grow up like that, it's only natural that you are going to be a self-confident sort of person. And Moses thought, look at me. No one is better qualified than I am to lead the people, my own people, and the people of God, the Israelites, out of bondage. This is my job. And we can see it seems he took it upon himself that he was going to be their liberator. He was going to do that. And in verse 11, we read that he saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, and he took it into his mind to carry out this rather impetuous and violent action. Looking this way and that and seeing no one, he killed the Egyptian and hid him in the sand. He was talented, he was trained, he had ability and gifting, and he was going to do it. He was going to fulfill those promises which God had given to the Israelite people centuries before, and he was going to lead them to freedom. And of course, we know from the story it didn't work out that way. And Moses failed in his bid. He thought the people would rally to him. And instead, in verse 14, we read an Israelite saying to him, a Hebrew saying, who made you ruler and judge over us? And his plans crumbled and came to nothing, and he had to actually run away. You might say, well, that's really tough. You know, he had the right intention. He was trying to do the right thing. He wanted to do what he thought God had for these people, the Israelites. And yet it all just came to pieces, and he failed. He was a failure. But the thing is, God meant it for his benefit. God meant it for the benefit of Moses. Moses had to learn that true power didn't rest with him and with his abilities and with all the things that he'd learned. God was the one with the power. It's really interesting to contrast verse 11, for instance, where we see Moses went out and watched the people of Israel. It says he went out to where his own people were, and he watched them, and he decided to take action, and he failed. compare that with what happens in verse 25. God looked on the Israelites and was concerned about them. When God looks on the Israelites, he puts in chain a series of events that leads to the most amazing liberation for his people through miraculous acts and displays of power that are unlike anything we've ever witnessed. God was the one with the power. And as we come to the later part of the story, we see God is actually the main actor, not Moses. And that's something that he had to learn. And God was teaching him something, helping him to grow as he came to the end of that first stage of his life. And so Moses ran away. In verse 15, Moses fled from Pharaoh and went to live in Midian. Moses went from the first great period of his life as a high flyer to the second period where he was a fugitive and an outcast. He went to live in Midian. It's in the northern part of the Arabian desert. It's a wasteland. There wouldn't have been many people there. What a come down from being in the royal family of Egypt to this anonymous life tending sheep, as we read in verse 1 of chapter 3, tending the flock of his father-in-law. I wonder how that felt for Moses. Again, we read elsewhere in the Bible that this was 40 years. This wasn't just a few years diversion for him. 40 years of his life, he lived out this existence. We can infer that he felt isolated, dislocated from his own people. In verse 22, he has a son and he names him Gershom, saying, "I've become an alien in a foreign land." And I can see some of you looking up behind me. These are some of the wonderful mosaics, actually, from the 6th century cathedral in Ravenna in Italy, if any of you are privileged enough to be there. And perhaps just gives you something to focus on as you think about this life of Moses as a shepherd during this time. But he was isolated. And perhaps he was questioning God and calling out to God, just like the whole Israelite nation was, as we read in verse 23, the Israelites groaned in their slavery and cried out. This wasn't a happy time. This wasn't a good time. Sure, God was providing for Moses. He had a family. But this was different to the way he expected things to be. And again, we might say, well, that's a bit harsh. Why did it have to be like that? You know, this is a guy that's trying to follow God. Why did it have to be like this for Moses? And we see again that God meant it for the best. He meant it for the good of Moses and for his personal development. This is a time where he learned humility. Perhaps he learned his lesson too well. In chapter 3 and verse 11, we read, Moses said to God, "Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt?" And God gets a bit fed up with him after that. But he learns humility. That confidence, that self-assertiveness that was there is drained away from him. He's not the same man that he was. He's become humble. And the Bible tells us the most humble man in the world. And the Hebrew word there can also be translated long-suffering. Or much enduring. And that's in the book of Numbers. It tells us that's what Moses was like. And this is something he learned during this period. And that's something he needed for his later role in life and what made him so famous. And this is a time when Moses learned about gentle shepherding. And in the Psalms we read, "You led your people like a flock by the hand of Moses." And this is a time when Moses had the opportunity to develop some of those very different skills, perhaps, than the ones that he'd learnt in Egypt. So we see that through this barren and difficult time where God perhaps seemed rather absent to Moses, still God had his best in mind and was working to develop him and create something in him. And so we come to the last period, which I would like to point out for us today, in Moses' life, and that is Moses as the late developer. And at the age of 80, Moses
receives his call. As we read it in verse 10, "Go, I'm sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt." At this stage, Moses receives this call to his really glorious and final occupation as the liberator and lawmaker of the people of Israel. And again, I can see you looking, because here we have a Michelangelo statue of Moses based on this period, I suppose, and it's a tribute to what Moses achieved, I suppose, that 3,000 years after he died, someone decided to chisel out something like this in his memory, and 3,000 years after I died, if someone put up a statue that looked that buffed and imposing of me, I think I've probably done something right. But after 40 years of learning his craft as a statesman in Egypt, and after 40 years of then learning to be humble, God felt that Moses was ready for this amazing calling, which unfolds through the rest of the Old Testament law. Now, I don't know about you, but to me, the most amazing thing about this is that it took so long. God took a whole lifetime to develop Moses in this way. And we've looked at these three main periods of his life, and God was at work through them to shape Moses and change him and take him to where he wanted him to go. And this isn't really our style. We're into instant, aren't we? Instant food. Shove it in the microwave, bring it out, take the wrapper off. That's how we like it. Instant communication. We get fed up with writing letters, so we have email, and we get fed up with that, so we have texting and Blackberries, and who knows what's coming next. We'll be able to read each other's minds, and, you know, we want everything instant. And traveling by ship isn't good enough. We need to have railroads, and that's not good enough. We need planes and jet planes and rockets and what do they do it on Star Trek? You know, they buzz backwards and forwards. That's where we're going, because we like everything instant. But the God we worship is not like that. He's the eternal one, ancient one. The same yesterday, today, and forever. And he's not in our kind of hurry. He's got a lifetime to work with you and with me. That's something that Moses learned through his long lifetime. It's really interesting to read his response to that. We have his words in Psalm 90. And it's the only psalm that we know was written by Moses. So it's really interesting to read some of his reflections there. I'm going to give you an abridged version and just read a few verses from this psalm. This is what Moses said. "Before the mountains were born, or you brought forth the earth and the world, from everlasting to everlasting, you are God. For 1,000 years in your sight are like a day that has just gone by, or like a watch in the night. And the length of our days is 70 years, or 80, if we have the strength, or 120, if you're amazing like me. Teach us to number our days aright, that we may gain a heart of wisdom." And through this life which God gave him, Moses came to recognize something special about God, the immensity of God and his everlasting nature, and the fact that God isn't an instant God, and he's not in our kind of hurry. He will take a lifetime to keep developing each of us and changing us and causing us to grow into what he wants us to be. How should we respond to this story? Very quickly, if I could just bring us a few points to think about. First, I'd say just be encouraged. I'm very encouraged when I look at this story, because oftentimes in my life when I'm perplexed about what's going on, and I think, well, what's this happened? Why am I in this dead end? Why is nothing happening now? But no matter how perplexing my current situation, or disheartening, or unhappy, I can trust, by God's grace, that God means it for my good.
And I hope that doesn't come across as glib to anyone here. I'm sure many of you face situations that are much more dire than anything that I've been through. But this is the purpose of this story, to encourage us that God means the different stages he takes us through for our good. Even the painful ones, God means them for our growth, for our salvation, and for the benefit of the church. We often read the verses in Jeremiah 29, don't we? Or the verse in Jeremiah 29. I know the plans I have for you. I know the plans I have for you. That's our God. And I suppose in the long term, even if not in this life, in the long term. Oh, thank you, Hervé. In the long term, I'll see why God ordered my days in the way that he did. Even if it's not on this earth, I'll find out sometime why things happened the way they did. So we can be encouraged by what we see in Moses. It also encourages us to be in an attitude of learning, because we see that the different things that happened to Moses were in order to benefit him and cause him to grow. And we should also take that attitude when we come to a new situation in life. It's not actually a bright new opportunity to complain. It's a new opportunity to learn. Again, not wanting to be glib, but just to say whether it's a fruitless job or a frustrating family situation or even an illness, what is God wanting you to learn? I can't say that. I'd never say that. But it's an attitude we can take for ourselves to seek to learn. To learn contentment, to learn grace, to learn dependence upon God, whatever it might be that we think we can learn in a situation. So we can be encouraged by the story of Moses. We can take on an attitude of learning. And we can also seek to be patient. And to me, that's the overwhelming sense that I get from this story. We see that God isn't in any kind of hurry with us. Psalm 37 says, "Be still before the Lord and wait patiently for him." We pray with perseverance to God, and we wait on God with confidence that he hears, just as he heard the Israelites through those 40 long years while Moses was in Midian. The Israelites cried out to God, and it says he heard them. They didn't see anything, but he heard them. And we wait on God in confidence that he hears us. Be patient with what God has for you. Finally, I just want to say, John, Mark, and Azan, whatever the future holds, we trust that God will continue to grow and develop the both of you. And we just want to continue to encourage you to trust him in all those stages of life. And I pray to God that the same would be true of all of us. Shall we just pray?